I want you to think of the three people who know you best. Maybe it's a group of friends. Maybe it's your mom or your spouse, a sibling, a child, someone you work with, a counselor, a teacher. Get those three people in your mind for a moment. Now imagine that those three people were asked, what matters most to this person? You're not there, but these three folks are going to say what they believe matters most to you. Not what you wish mattered most, but what you show them with your life, with your actions, with your attitudes, about what you really value. What would they say? We'd get a picture of what you really care about from these people who know you. Now imagine we add to that picture, a careful account of the way you've spent every minute for the last 2 months, the way you've used every moment of your time, and also we have a record of the every expenditure of money of yours for that same time period. We would end up with a three-part picture: how you use your time, how you use your money, and what the people who are close to you see that you really value. We'd have a good picture of what really matters to you, of how you are deciding to use this one life that you have. We would get a picture of what you are ambitious for. What is it that really matters to you? Not what you wish you cared about, but on the basis of how you use your time and your resources and what the people who know you would see, think for a moment, what is it that you are really striving for in this life that you have? This is a question maybe that we don't think about much, but it's a good one to think about because we have only one life. And there are a lot of meaningless things that people spend their lives chasing. This summer, we have been listening to week after week the words that Jesus spoke. Hold on, it's going to come up. There we go. Thank you. We've been listening to Jesus because we believe he has the words of life, words that are true. And Jesus himself spoke about ambition. He knew that people choose to spend their lives on many different things, seemingly endless possibilities of what you could choose to give your life to. But when he taught about ambition, and that's what we're going to look at this morning, he said that it really boils down to two options, that there are really only two different ways that you can spend your life pursuing two different kinds of ambitions. I want to look at that with you this morning. If you have a Bible and you want to read along, open to Matthew chapter 6. I'm going to have the text up here as well. Because Jesus speaks quite clearly, giving guidance about the way in which our ambitions ought to be directed. And it is true that if any one of us would listen and learn, that we could experience a revolution in our lives that would be the best for us and for all the people around us. So let's look now together at what Jesus says about the subject of ambition in chapter 6 of Matthew, starting in verse 19. Here's how it goes. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus is a great teacher. He addresses the subject of ambition by conjuring up an image. He paints a picture of a man who is storing up for himself treasures. He organizes his life around the pursuit of something. Picture for a moment in your mind a man who is ambitious for getting and then storing up some kind of treasure. How does he behave? He uses the time he's got for the kinds of activities that would lead him toward the goal that he has. He chooses relationships in his life that will move him closer to what he wants, and he avoids ones that keep him from what he's after. If his friends will move him toward the goal that he has set for himself, well, then he'll be dedicated to them. But the moment they stand in his way, he will set them aside and find new friends. This fellow uses all of his energy. He pours it all into the kinds of things that will help him acquire his goal. He uses the resources he has, the extra time, the extra thoughts. Everything about his resources are poured into this one goal. In his thinking, he strategizes in the present how to get it. And when he thinks of the future, he imagines how to hold on to that which he's got. He is a person who organizes his life around this goal. One way to say it would be that at the center of his existence is this ambition of his. The way Jesus describes it is there in the last phrase in his teaching. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. When Jesus says heart, he doesn't just mean your organ of sentimental feelings. That's the way we use that word heart. He means the center of your will and your emotions, your intellect, the thing that you choose with, the thing that you strategize with, the thing that you anticipate the future with. Your heart is all of you. What Jesus means here very simply is the thing that becomes your treasure is where you are going to put your whole self. One way to think of it is that thing which you're ambitious for, it becomes the center of your life around which you are in orbit, like a moon around a planet. And what every thoughtful human being should do, and what everyone who would come to listen to Jesus has to do, is ask the question, what is at the center of my life? What have I chosen to set myself in orbit around? What is the thing that matters most to me? What am I giving my whole self to? And then after asking that question, the next thing that should come is very simply this. Is it worth it? Is it worth this life of mine to strive after this thing that to me appears to be a treasure? Do you know that there are many people who set themselves very concrete goals and they pour themselves into getting those, and then when they finally achieve what they were after, they realize it wasn't worth it? Have you ever known anyone like that? When I was in college, I was in a major at Rutgers College, physics, and I was a dreadful student. And there was a friend of mine who was in the same major named Norm, and that was his name. Like, I'm not making that up. He was a great student, and every night when I was off playing with my friends, he was studying in the library, and when we graduated, we sat side by side at Rutgers. There were, I don't know, a million students or something like that. It's a big school. And before they called all the names of the students, they said there are three students who've achieved perfect scores in their 4 years at Rutgers. And they read their names, and one of them was my friend Norm. At that point, I didn't know. I hadn't really thought of it. I wasn't paying attention. When he was studying, I was off doing my own thing. I applauded for him loudly, as did the others. And you know what he said to me when he sat down? He looked at me in the face. He said, "You have no idea how much I gave up for this. It wasn't worth it." Now listen, I'm not done preaching. Parents, I'm not telling your students to not study. All right? I am simply pointing out the plain and very obvious fact when we pause and reflect on what we're giving our lives to, that very often we'll be tempted to give our lives to things that are not worth it. And that's what Jesus means by treasures on earth. Let's dig a little deeper into that. Again, I want you to see this, that the two ways that Jesus envisions, there's just two. No matter what it is you're striving after, it's either going to be a treasure on earth or a treasure in heaven. I want to start with that first kind, treasure on earth, the 4.0 in physics at Rutgers. What else tempts us as a treasure that we should give ourselves to that's not worth it? We can start with something we know with absolute certainty. The disciples that Jesus was talking to when he first said this, the treasure that many of them struggled with seeking was getting esteem from their peers. That means they wanted to be praised by their friends. The reason we know this for sure, and this is simple. If you read this bit that we've read together in Matthew 6:19, and you look at what Jesus says right before he talks about treasures on earth, he paints three pictures of people who are trying really hard to get other people to like them and praise them. Have any of you ever struggled with that? Yes or no? Good. I'm not going to like you more just because you admit it this morning. But that is something that disciples struggle with. It's quite amazing. Jesus tells a story, okay, in Matthew chapter 6, first about a person who comes to the temple to give some money. That's a good thing to do. As a disciple, you should give your money away. Jesus pictures this fellow who is ready to give his money, but he waits to put his money in the box until just the right moment. He blows a trumpet so everybody sees him, and then he puts it in. He's doing a good thing, but he's doing it to seek the praise of other people. He wants to be liked, and that's his treasure that he's seeking. The very next picture Jesus presents is a picture of a person praying. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Here again, someone doing a great thing, talking to God, but this fellow does it in public, and he does it in just such a way so everyone sees him, because what he wants, Jesus says it, is that others would see him. He also wants the praise of other people. Immediately after that picture, Jesus talks about fasting. That means choosing not to eat for some holy purpose. And then he says, someone is going to do this, and they're going to make sure they look really terrible, so somebody asks him, why do you look so bad? So they can brag about how holy they are. Again, a person doing something good, but for the wrong reason. All three of them are people who want the praise of others. That is the treasure that they are storing up. It's the thing they use their time for. It's the thing that they engage their imagination around how to acquire from others. They work hard at building it up. I'm sure that someone who hears me this morning, because Jesus wasn't just talking to those people back then, I'm sure that someone who hears me this morning has labored under the burden of trying to manufacture a positive image of themselves around others by doing holy things. Some of you are constantly at work trying to store up a good image for yourself by trying to do good things in front of other people. That's miserable. Jesus' counsel when it comes to that kind of treasure, which is a perfect example of an earthly treasure that we might be tempted to store up, is very plain and simple and direct. He says, do not store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And then he follows with an explanation of why. Where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. What is it about moth, rust, and thief that teaches us what he means when he says treasures in heaven? I think this is quite ingenious. Again, Jesus is a phenomenal teacher. What a moth. Think of a moth for a moment. A moth is a natural thing. It's a little tiny element of nature. But the moth has tremendous power over things that people treasure. Not just moths, but all of nature. The physical things, the things that we seek like praise, the kinds of ambitions that we center our lives around when we are people whose focus is just on this earth, we end up searching for things that are less powerful than nature, even in its tiniest elements, moths. Rust. For the ancient mind, rust is another element that is corrosive. It represents time. Every beautiful thing, every shiny treasure, you wait long enough and it begins to break down. Time destroys things that people seek for and treasure. The thief, Jesus' third image here, the thief represents the corrosive power of historical circumstances that are outside of our control. You may get a great thing. You may hold on to it and do everything you can to protect it, but you know there are thieves who can come in and take it away. When I was a kid, I used to try to make my car look nice, and my dad always said, don't make it look too nice, someone will steal it. That's a justification for why my car looks so miserable these days. The very simple counsel of Jesus, and it's good, is that these things to which we give our whole selves, which we throw our hearts into, not just shiny metal objects that can rust, but the praise of other people, time takes that away. You can be popular now. In 2 weeks, no one cares about you anymore. Because there's some new video on YouTube, double rainbows. That guy's a nobody now. You know what I'm talking about? You already forgot about him after chocolate rain and all those other things. This is so topical. Young people are with me. Old people, what's he talking about? Jesus Christ, this wonderful and wise teacher, is not the first person historically to make this observation. Really, if a thoughtful person reflects, they'll see the transience of these things that we give ourselves to, the evanescence of all of those treasures that we're after. In 536 BC, there was a boy that was born right on the border of India and Nepal. Siddhartha Gautama was his name. His father was a king. He was born into a family of unparalleled privilege. He had everything: power, wealth. He had the praises of all the people around him. He had luxury. He had women. He had temples that were dedicated to him and palaces that he could do whatever he wanted with. By any earthly standards, he had all the treasures you could imagine. But then in his 20s, a deep discontent settled into his heart. Legend has it that his father and some of the wise counselors of his, they saw this young prince, and in him they saw unparalleled potential. They believed that this young man, Siddhartha, could become the king of all of India, that he could unify the entire land if only he was nurtured in such a way that he remained attached to earthly treasures. They knew if they could nurture in him this thirst for power and wealth and authority, that they could turn this young man into the king who ruled over all of India. And so legend has it, his father did everything he could to protect this young man from ugliness, gave him 40,000 dancing women. No one ugly was ever allowed to be in his presence. He was to be protected from sickness, decrepitude, and death. He liked to ride horses. And every time he went out for a ride, the king would send runners out in front of him to clear the roads of any unsightly things. One day he went out on a ride, and one of the runners had missed a single old man. Siddhartha stopped. He was a very sensitive young man. He stopped and he saw this man with broken teeth, gray hair, bent posture, leaning on a staff. He was startled, and what broke upon him instantly was, time has power over beauty. Life breaks down. Jesus hadn't come around yet. If he had, he might have said, rust corrodes. He went out on a ride the next day. This time on the side of the road, he saw a person who was sick lying there on the ground. Moth consumes. He didn't say that. But he saw that this wonderful and splendid treasure that he had been taught to care so much for was subject to these tiny things that could ruin it. He saw a corpse on the next day. He became deeply disenchanted. When he returned to the palace, suddenly he was not so taken with all of the treasures that before had won his heart. The discontent grew in him. And then one evening after midnight, he was 28 years old. It's been called now the great going forth. He grabbed one of the attendants of the palace. He said, "You're going to go on a ride with me." They got on the horse. They rode all night until dawn. They arrived at the edge of a forest. Siddhartha got off the horse. He took off his princely clothing and he asked the servant for his. They switched clothes. Siddhartha shaved his head and sent this attendant back to the palace with news. This young man believed that he had woken up. He was the man who woke up. Do you know what that word in his language was? Buddha. This is a story of how Buddhism started. He went off into the woods, Siddhartha, now Buddha, because he woke up to see what Jesus was teaching here, that none of this stuff matters. Now, this is beautiful, but what this young man did is strikingly different from Jesus in one way. He went off to pursue detachment. That is to renounce all ambition, to let everything go, to stop pursuing things with your full heart, except for just being by oneself. He was there 8 years alone. Jesus speaks to every person who is currently giving their life to something that it's not worth, some earthly treasure, and he says, don't be ambitious for that. But he does not go on to say, renounce desire altogether. He doesn't. Look at what he says again with me. He says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. That means become tenaciously ambitious for something different. Where moth and rust do not consume, and where thieves do not break in and steal, we must ask very simply, what does he mean by store up treasures in heaven? What does Jesus mean by that? It's good for us to know what not to do, but it's better for us to know what to do. Now, I was thinking about this question because I knew my sermon would only be as good as the answer that I can come up with here. What does Jesus mean by store up for yourselves treasure in heaven? I have a friend. He's very wise. He teaches theology at a Christian university. He got the teacher of the year. He's so impressive. So I decided I'd ask him and let him sort of preach the last part of my sermon. So I have my phone here because I sent him a text message. This is the best way to communicate. Adults, you really got to learn about this. I sent him a text message, and I've got it here because I don't want to mistake his answer here. It's important. Where is it? Here it is. This is at 4:30 on Wednesday. What does Jesus mean when he says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven? That was my text. Here was the response. And this was at just 14 minutes later. It took him 14 minutes to come up with this. I guess if you're good, you get a nice car and a fancy house in heaven. I promptly deleted his number from my contacts, and I called the phone company and put a block on his number. It sounds a little bit like that's what Jesus is saying, doesn't it? Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. He must mean do lots of good things now, and later you get rewards for all the good things you've done. If you just work hard now at doing the right things, when you get to heaven, there'll be lots of good things there. There's a couple reasons why that's not right. And I know my friend was being sarcastic, and I'm still friends with him. Listen, first of all, heaven in the Gospel of Matthew is not just a place where you might go if you're good enough when you die. Heaven is a complex term in Matthew. Often it's used to talk about the kingdom of God as something that's not just in the sweet by and by, but in a special way is present in Jesus with his own ministry and his own life right now. And the idea that we would do good things now and somehow earn God's favor later, we know that even though that seems like what maybe is happening, we know that's not true. Do you remember when I talked about Jesus' prayer just a few weeks ago? Do you remember what he taught the disciples to pray to God with regard to their debts? He did not say, pray to God, please let the good things I've done outweigh the bad things I've done. He didn't say that. Do you remember what he said? Pray, forgive me. Jesus teaches us not to be concerned about earning more good than bad. We can't do that. He teaches us just to know that God is the one to whom we can say, forgive me, and trust in his forgiveness because of who Jesus is, the one who teaches us. When Jesus says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, he's talking about something quite different than working hard to be good enough. Think again about the image of the person who is storing up treasures. It's the person who gives their heart to something. When Jesus says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, let me make it as simple as I can. I think he's saying, in a way, give your heart to me. Listen, give your heart to Jesus. Again, I don't just mean the sentimental part of you, but your intellect and your will, your desires and your drives, your ambitions and the things you strive for. You don't try really hard to get those right. If you'll do that, you'll have a whole new ambition that you'll fail at. Instead, you come to Jesus Christ, the gracious teacher who loves you so much that he means to teach you, but not only teach you, to give his life for you, which he's done already. You can let go of every ambition of trying to make yourself right. You come to this wonderful teacher, Jesus, and when he says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, you hear him say, give me your heart. And you know what happens when you do that? When he's the one you center yourself around, when you in simple trust and faith come to him and say, here I am, then he revolutionizes your ambitions. He makes all of the things that you used to aim at, he makes them apparent for what they are, which is just trifles that moth and rust can destroy and thieves can take. And he gives you a whole new vision for what to be about. And then he doesn't say just detach yourself and stop caring about anything. He says throw yourself into this with all of the tenacity that the very best Wall Street trader puts himself into when he earns money, whatever they do, I don't know. Work as hard as that guy at coming to me, giving me your heart, and then let me show you what to care about. And with everything you have, with all that you are, with your time, your resources, your relationships, your ingenuity, your intelligence, your energy, your creativity, throw yourself into pursuing that thing. Have you ever seen someone who throws themselves at doing God's will with that kind of tenacity? Have you seen that ever? Isn't that incredibly enlivening and so unbelievably inspiring? It is. It's a shame that in our day and our culture, the people who live like that, they get no press. They should, but they don't. They're not sensational enough. There are many, though. There are many people who have looked at this world and all of its foolishness and, like this fellow Siddhartha said, it's worthless. But then, like Jesus, have said, how can I give myself, to my heart, to the Jesus who is the one who owns everything and ask him, you revolutionize my desires and my ambitions, and then become ambitious for the things that he wants. It's not an accident that this teaching of Jesus comes right after he's pictured a bunch of people whose main treasure is getting the praise of people. If he says, don't do that, but instead do this, Jesus is saying, make your goal to please God. Make your ambition finding the things that he values and value those. Make it your goal to see what Jesus strives after and strive after that. Care about what God thinks of you. You do that and you will be free from endless chains and burdens in this life, and you will be set free to become a person of true power and grace in the world, not for yourself, but for God. Then you will become someone who matters for the world that is so desperately in need of people who have the right ambitions. Here are some of those ambitions. I'll close with this. Love. Look at the way that Jesus loved people and make it your ambition to do that too. Think about it. Spend your time on it. Use your resources for it. Become creative. Serving other people, teaching them to follow Jesus. Those of you who work with young adults or high school students or middle school students in our church, you put everything you've got into that. That's a wonderful ambition. Don't just give your time, give your money, give your intelligence, give your strategizing, your working to figure out how to help them understand Jesus and follow him. This is the kind of ambition that Jesus would love for you to have. Those of you who have yet to begin serving Jesus with your relationships with others, maybe for you, you're thinking, oh, I know there's a lot of single moms who need someone to come alongside of them. That's an ambition that's worth living for. Make that your goal and do it. Don't wait for someone like me or some church person to say you can do it. Go and do it. Give your heart to Jesus and then follow the path that he sets before you. Maybe it's serving the poor in this particular community in a specific way, or being involved with folks who can't speak English well around here. There's no end to the kinds of ambitions that would count for what Jesus says, storing for yourselves treasures in heaven, following Jesus and his ambitions. My friends, it is as simple as listening and choosing to listen to Jesus, who gave himself for you already, and who only asks that you do the one thing that would be the very best thing, which is to set this heart of yours in his hands, and then to live a life where he's at the center, and you revolve around him thankfully and joyfully, not striving any longer, but just turning yourself over to him. My prayer for us this morning is that these words would sink into our hearts, our wills, our minds, our intentions, and that we would be transformed as we hear from Jesus. I'm going to pray now. I want the musicians to come up. I've asked them to sing a particular song and to lead us in a particular song after we're done, because this song is a good expression of a person whose ambition is to follow after Christ. As we sing it, think and turn it into a prayer, if you would. Make this your response to this sermon this morning, to sing and to express your desire to be one whose ambition is shaped by Jesus, as we sing the song, Jesus, I, My Cross Have Taken. Let's pray now, and then we'll sing. God, I thank you so much for this morning and for the chance to gather with this community around your word. I pray that the word of Christ would dwell in us and that it would bear much fruit as we're transformed by his life-giving words. I ask that each of us would go about conscious of the things that we are ambitious for, that we would be aware of what we're striving after, and that we would recall quite simply that there are only two ways, either treasures that are on earth or in heaven. And I pray that you would make us aware of how every moment we are free to give ourselves to you and in that way pursue treasures in heaven, that we can be ambitious for the things that you're ambitious for, and that the greatest joy and the greatest usefulness in this world would come if we would only do that. God, I pray that you would break down every barrier in us to this kind of living, and that you would make us into your true disciples. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.